Greetings. Welcome to Confessing the Blues. I'm your host, Jim Ange Anderson. On today's show, we're featuring guitarist, singer, recording artist, and bandleader, Chicago Bob Mandarino. Bob is celebrating his 16th season of his All-Star Blues Review Jam Session. He's also won Blues Music Award for Keeping the Blues Alive. Let's get on with the show. All right, Chicago Bob, welcome to the Farmhouse Studios.
How you doing?
Good, man. Glad you could make it.
Cool.
So the big news is that your All-Star Jam is entering its 16th year. Can you talk about the jam?
Mike Boyle, our good friend Mike Boyle, mm-hmm. He originally started this. It was at Bottoms Up. It was a seasonal thing out on the deck and stuff. And I went there and would play with all these people and stuff. And I thought, this is really great, you know. Getting to see people that you normally would have to go downtown and stuff see. We started in DeMott, and I brought Mike on. We were doing like a winter version of it, and it went over really good. The locals all liked it and stuff. And then Mike got his summer gig back again, so we kept both of them going. Nice. And just kind of took off from there. I kind of elaborated on what Mike did and just went from there.
And you've had, I know now you have the New Home Wreckers as your house band.
Yeah.
And who does that consist of?
Bruce Felgen on bass, Hollywood Johnny Cosgrove on guitar, myself, and this year it'll be Terrence Williams on drums.
I don't know Terrence. Who's
T-Man from the Expressions band, and I forgot the other name of his band he's tours with and stuff.
Okay. And so over the years, I know you've had Kenny Kinsey on bass, and you've had some great musicians you worked with. Who else have you
Kenny Kinsey, Ralph Kinsey, the list goes on. Little Daddy on keys at times. Bill Hayden on keys at times. Sonny Lee from Sonny Lee Tritt on saxophone and stuff.
Dennis, right?
Dennis Sinberg, yeah. On keys and sax at one time and stuff. It's just a rotating. Bobby Baker on bass. He's in Detroit now. A lot of great players, you know.
And that's just the house band.
Yes. Yeah.
Because, I mean, I've met some other musicians at your jam, but people I've heard of and I didn't know, and it's been a great opportunity just for musicians to network.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I kind of encourage the guest hosts to, that's what it is, what it's all about. It's a kind of a jam when we bring in a different guest host every week. So it's kind of a blues show without going downtown and paying the crazy covers and parking and all the other stuff. And for people that are never going to go downtown, this is an outlet to see what real Chicago blues is like.
Right. So as far as some of your guest hosts, again, that's been a who's who in the Chicago blues scene, right?
Yeah, it got real crazy. We've had some of the greatest players. Carl Weathersby's been there, yeah. John Primer, Tom Holland, Randy Johnson, Maurice John Vaughn. The list goes on and on. But it's just, you know, you never know who's going to show up. And I kind of encourage the guest host, if you're not gigging that night and you got nothing to do, come out and hang out with us, help support the other guest hosts, which kind of took off because musicians that haven't seen each other for years are all of a sudden hooking back up again. Right. We had Dr. Root Music, Mr. Roy Hightower. He hooked up with Maurice John Vaughn and Johnny Drummer, and the list goes on.
I went one night when you're doing the Sunday locally here, and I saw Carl Weathersby. What a great show. He was on fire.
People came all the way from Peoria, Springfield, Wisconsin, just for that show.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want to have to go downtown to see Carl and stuff. They thought it was really great that here's a venue. There's no cover. Don't have to pay to park, and there's good food.
Right.
So
Rockin' Johnny, another guy. I wanted to go hang out and listen to Rockin' Johnny, and then we got to perform together, which was a rare treat for me.
Right. Yeah, and you know, too, you know, if you're touring all over the place or playing all the clubs and stuff, you might be playing at this club tonight, and then down the street so-and-so is playing, and you never get a chance to hook up. So this is like another chance to hook up, too. And then it's open after we do the opening show and stuff. for other jammers to get up, and we'll just mix it up. And there's no list. You know, you tell me who you want to get up with, and you just get up and have a good time.
Yeah, what I was impressed with early on, that there was a lot of younger musicians. And I'd see them 1 year and then maybe see them a couple years later and seeing how they really had progressed and evolved.
Right. That we can't do that now because it's 21 and older.
Sure.
But originally, when we first started, it was all ages. So you'd get a 16-year-old. We had this young boy down the street, played guitar pretty good, and he would come out, and he would get up with a guest host, and he got up with Eddie C. Campbell, and he's up there playing, and he came down, and he's going, "No, that was cool. That was cool." I go, "Do you know who that man is?" And he's like, "No, I ain't got a clue." I go, "Well, you better go look up on your computer when you get home, and you come back and tell me." And he came back the next week, and he's like, "Oh, my God, do you know who that guy is?"
That's excellent.
So, but, you know, I missed those days watching people progress and come up and do that. But now we're kind of stuck with the, 21
and
older.
Yeah. But maybe some of those kids now are getting to be old enough where they can come. I remember the one guy went into the military.
Andy Swanka.
And he was a guy who, you know, was sort of meek and mild and he did a nice job. The last time I saw him, he was singing and playing and running the show.
And he was on fire, too.
Yeah, yeah. You
know? Yeah. He joined the military. I think he did a couple of tours in Afghanistan. He got married down there and him just had a baby and stuff. They lived down in Georgia and stuff. He shoots me a message one now and then that he misses coming up here playing. But
yeah. That's cool. So out of all the different people and different names, do you have any particular highlights of nights where just it was a magical night, or there was just some great music, or something surprising happened?
There's way too many right. of them to even remember. Carl Weathersby was always a knockout. You know, he's like channels Albert King, and all of a sudden you feel like Albert King is right there. You know, and
right.
he's playing the Flying V and everything and stuff, and he knows how to work an audience. He knows how to lead the band and stuff. Like me and Johnny were saying, we would pay to play with him. You know?
Yeah.
Roy Hightower, that's another one that he surprised me. He just showed up at the jam one night, and he goes by Dr. Root Music now, and he introduced himself as Dr. Root and stuff, and I go, "Okay, cool, do you play?" And he's like, "Oh, yeah, I play and stuff." And I go, "Would you like to get up?" And he goes, "Sure, I'll get up, you know." And then Johnny Drummer pulls me on my arm. He goes, "You know who that is?" And he goes, I go, "He just said he was Dr. Root Music." He goes, "That's Roy Hightower." And I go, "I remember Roy Hightower when I was a kid growing up and stuff."
Yeah.
And then trying to get in the old clubs in the old days, trying to get in there to see him stuff. I was a big fan of his for a long time. And I'm like, here he is at my show getting up to play and stuff. So that was another one of those crazy moments. And then other people were showing up and getting up and playing with him. And it was like, you couldn't put this lineup together if you tried, you know.
Right.
And I wish a lot of that was recorded, but it wasn't. But a lot of great moments and stuff happened and stuff. Ronnie Hicks, you know, same thing. When he shows up, you never know who's going to pop in with him and stuff. So,
yeah, it's got to be a thrill week after week, a challenge as well, to just, all right, who do we have this week? What are we? Oh, we're playing the A flat this week. Okay, you know, whatever it is. I mean, it's musically got to be a challenge, but also a thrill to play with a lot of these different musicians on a weekly basis.
Yeah, it pushes you to do real good. Mike Gibb told me years ago, surround yourself with the best players and you'll be good and stuff. You know, and Al Stone, he used to tell me that and stuff when we were kids and stuff and learning how to play. And it's true. You know, you learn. Yeah, it's like, it's not my turn to shine, and I'm not here to show off, but I'm here to make that person look as good as I can, you know. And that's part of what we do, is because most of these clubs couldn't afford to have that band there,
right?
So you get to get a taste of what they do without having to pay a ton of money and stuff, you know. So,
well, that's something I've experienced being a guest host, is that band is so tight. Your band is so tight. And they're up for anything and everything. In fact, sometimes they challenge me. Like, hey, let's do this. Let's try that. And it's really a privilege. And, you know, sometimes you go to jam nights and people aren't engaged, or they're they're just not into it, or they're maybe not capable to play certain things. Where the New Homewreckers is a rock solid band.
No, we can't play everything, but we try hard and stuff, you know. And we never rehearse or nothing, so it's always on the spot rehearsal and stuff. It's just, you know, Johnny says it best, you know, this guy gets it, or this guy doesn't get it, you know. Yeah. And I think everybody in the Homewreckers gets it, and they know what we got to do. I think, you know, this is one of the best lineups I've had since we started this, so, you know.
So 16 years, did the time go by quickly, or does it seem like?
It seems like just 2 years ago we were sitting down with Mike Boyle and doing this.
Yeah.
You know, back then it was the Sandbox, and we're actually back where we started from. Over the years, you know, different club owners, and then everything changes, so yeah. We moved the show somewhere else. We were all the way down in 66th and Ashland doing it down there, and then it slowly worked its way back into the suburbs and stuff. And, you know, over the years, all the different lineups, they were all great in their own different way.
Right.
But, you know, that's what makes it fun. And no two shows are the same, you know. You know, we could have you one night, so it's kind of Kinksnakes, but the next night we could have Randy Johnson, and it's more soul or R&B,
right.
And it keeps you on your toes, and the audience isn't getting bored like I heard that song last week, you know. So
sure, if you go to see the same band every week, you're bound to hear the same stuff, but
right.
When there's a different sort of captain every week, it's
right.
Going to be a different show, and so it's got to be great for the audience.
Right, and then that's too, because now the guest host isn't with his or her own band, so we might be doing a song that they do a lot, but it might not have the same take.
For sure.
You know, so it leads something more interesting.
It takes that person out of their sort of comfort zone.
Right.
And gives them opportunities sometimes to expand and discover some new things. All of a sudden the band takes it in a different direction, and you're like, okay, well, let's go, you know.
We had Ryan Fram one night. Ryan Fram, he's an excellent up-and-coming young player and stuff, and this kid's really going to go somewhere. And so now we got three guitars, you know, and
right.
He's used to being the only guitar player. And he's like, we took a break, and he's like, I can't believe it. I can stop playing, and it don't fall apart.
Right. But that's just, you know, a testament to how what a good, strong band, you know, there is.
Thank you. Your typical jam, they told me when I first started, you know, if you get 6 months out of it, you're going to be lucky and stuff. And your typical jam is really just a farce. You know, they put it on the club owner to, let's have a jam, we can draw all these people in. Most of the jammers don't buy nothing. And all they want is their 15 minutes of fame. Then they're out the door to the next jam and stuff. I count more on having an audience sitting there and getting a show than all the jams and stuff, you know. The jammers come, that's fine. And it's also an attraction because I have a guest host. They have the chance that they can possibly sit in with the guest host. And that, you know, that can be that's been my dream for years and stuff. But, you know, it all comes true, and then things happen, and it just evolves from there and stuff. So
it's a good formula, because I don't know many jams I've been to where, yeah, they do count on the musicians to show up, and then the club owner says, the musician, all these guys are, you know, just drinking soda pop,
yeah.
And then they leave, and they don't tip the bartenders and
right,
all that,
right.
You know.
So I don't count on them. I mean, I count on them to come and have a good time and just have a place to jam and stuff and, you know, step out where you wouldn't, it's not your typical jam. But in the same token, we have a built-in audience. You know, this past year was our first year back at, it's called the Connolly Line Poorhouse now. It was originally a Sandbox and Bosley's and Bobolski's. But we did, you know, standing room only, you know, and two or three jammers come out. So, you know, everybody's getting a show and stuff from it.
So for our listeners, can you tell them where the County Line Poorhouse is?
Okay, I'm not going to give an address because it's going to send you somewhere else if you GPS it. But it's in DeMott, Indiana. It's right at the DeMott-Roselawn border. So if you take I-65 north or south to exit number 230, that's Indiana Route 10, go west to the first stoplight, which is only like an eighth of a mile. It's right there on the corner. You can't miss it. County Line Poorhouse.
Can't miss it. We talked about the New Homewreckers. You guys have created some relationships with some different artists that have evolved into some other opportunities. I know that you did some recording with Dolores Scott. Can you talk about that?
Oh, yeah. Dolores, I met Dolores. Killer Ray Allison, the late Killer Ray Allison, he used to come down and do our jam and stuff, and it was really great. You know, he would put on a great show and stuff. And he was always inviting me to come down to the Flamingo where his band was performing and stuff on Monday or Tuesday nights, I forget which. You know, so it was like 67th and Cottage, you know. And so I was like, yeah, yeah, I'll come down sometime. And I'm thinking, I'm not driving down there. It's the hood, you know. Yeah. And I was trying to get Myron Robinson was our drummer at the time. And I said, hey, Myron, come on, let's go down. He goes, I'm not going down there. So I just got in the car, threw my guitar in, went down one night. And it was the greatest thing in the world. Well, from that, I met Jimmy Pryor. Dolores Scott was in the audience. It was a who's who of blues in this one little room, you know. And then I took Johnny with me one time, and he goes, this is as close as you can get nowadays to going down to Teresa's in the old days. We went down with Johnny one night, and we brought Johnny McCauley was with us, and he normally plays guitar, but he can play drums. Yeah. So they called all of us up at the same time, and Johnny was in the bathroom. So when he came out, you know, we told him, you're going to have to play drums. He goes, all right, no problem, you know. So he's playing drums. We did three or four songs. We get down, and I'm watching him, and he's talking to this real tall guy over in the corner and stuff. So he comes back, and he's all smiles and stuff. I go, what'd that guy have to say to you? He goes, he told me I was a really good drummer. I was really tight and right in the pocket and stuff. And I said to him, I go, do you know who that is? And he goes, no, I don't know who that is. I go, that's Buddy Guy's drummer. That's Killer Ray Allison. And he just about hit the floor.
He played with Muddy, too.
Yeah. 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 He actually quit Buddy to go play with Muddy.
Right.
So, but yeah, that was, you know, there's all these. I met Dolores down there from that. She started doing gigs with us and stuff. And she started touring over in Italy and Spain and France and stuff. Dario Lombardo was bringing her over there and promoting her shows and stuff with her and stuff. And Dario kept telling her, you need a CD, something to sell and stuff. So she came back and she was putting her CD together. And she did some recordings in Italy with Dario's band, I think it was Model T Boogie. And then she did some recordings with another band she works with out in Colorado. So when she came back, I had an arrangement of Rock Me Baby, and she loved it and stuff. So she goes, we're going to record that. So we recorded that with Dario and her. And then she came back in, and we recorded a few more songs to finish up the album with the original, with the home records we have now. So, mm-hmm. But
let's listen to that Rock Me.
Okay. Thank you.
is Dario was playing on Rock Me, you say?
Dario was in town for Blues Fest, and he was staying at my house and stuff. So when we went in to record my arrangement of Rock Me Baby and stuff, we invited him to come sit in too. So he's on the CD too.
And you told me an interesting story earlier about how you met Dario.
Oh, that was crazy. Phil Guy had been touring over in Europe and using Dario's band as a backup band and stuff. As Phil was starting to get down in health and stuff, he was suggesting bringing these different people over and stuff and using Dolores and stuff like that. So we had our jam, and at that time, John from the Spot Studio was recording and broadcasting our show live on the internet and stuff. So they used to watch our show in Italy to see all these up-and-coming guests and stuff, you know. So Eric Guitar Davis got his tour and stuff because he got seen on our broadcast. I think Trey did too, and Lady Cat and stuff, and a few others too. But Dolores was the main one and stuff. She went over there and knocked him dead.
What's cool that you're doing a jam session in DeMott, Indiana, but it's worldwide.
Yeah, it was. You know, the Giggity TV kind of put a crimp to that. You know, most of these bigger name clubs all hook up with this Giggity TV where they put the thing on the wall and it records and records your show and broadcasts and stuff for you. Back then, we didn't have that.
John was ahead of his time.
Way ahead of the time. Yeah. He should have put some kind of a copyright or something on it.
Well, I see now people are doing like Facebook Live where you use your cell phone and record a show.
I just started doing that myself. Yeah. Like every Monday, every first and third Monday, Randy has his show down at Club LaVou in Chicago Heights. And it's another one of those who's who.
Yeah.
Who's going to walk in there and stuff. And so I'm sitting here on my cell phone, and I'm like looking at my Facebook, and it says go live. So a couple weeks ago, I tried it for the first time, and everybody's Facebook sent me a message back. Most amount of views for a CD, for a live video ever.
Wow.
And so I was like, well, what do I do now? And stuff.
Right.
So then last Monday, I was out there again, and I was going, I'll try this again. And I started recording stuff, and it was fun, except for somebody's like, well, how come you're not playing, you know? And I'm like, because I'm recording.
Yeah, you know? I'm running the camera.
It's finally I handed the phone to somebody else, and I got up and started playing and stuff. But, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Well, it's a new world that we live in.
Oh, yes, big time.
You know, let's go way back and talk about your origins in music. How did you get started in music?
Oh, wow. My dad bought me a guitar, like, 7th or 8th grade and stuff, and didn't have money for lessons and stuff, so I used to just watch other bands and try to copy what they were doing. Back then, I wasn't too good at listening to the record and trying to figure it out, although later on we were doing the slow the record down thing and stuff, and then my dad would come in and yell at us for that, you know. Al Stone, Al Cardozo, we went to high school together and stuff, so we were like one of the first garage bands we were in stuff, and he used to always just pound on me, you know, just get that groove, man, get that groove, you know. And I played rhythm behind him for a long time until it was like second nature and stuff, and then I started learning how to play lead and stuff like that there. But
so you were playing sort of rock songs of the day, or were you playing blues at all?
We were doing like boogie rock songs, not knowing that they were blues, you know, and you know, there was the British invasion thing, and we were doing Tell Mama and stuff, you know. But, yeah, it was blues, and we didn't know it was blues at the time. In fact, it was like in the mid-60s, I heard Crossroads by Cream, and I was like, man, that's like the ultimate solo, guitar solo.
Yeah.
How could you couldn't make it any more perfect. And then I was looking at the credits, and it said Robert Johnson. I'm like, who is Robert Johnson?
Yeah, keep on hearing this guy's name.
So it's like, start going to the library, and you know, they didn't have computers and stuff back then, and just trying to look up and trying to find old records and stuff, and you know, taking it from there. But from that, it just led to other different kinds of bands and stuff, and just kind of progressed from there. So,
was your first guitar electric guitar?
Yeah, it was a little Fender. What did they call it? it was like a Strat, but with only two single coil pickups. I don't know, say maybe a Mustang or something.
Mustang, I had ones with like little lamp switches on the top.
Yeah. You can never get the switch to work right and stuff. So you just leave them both on and stuff.
Just put tape on it, man.
No, just learn to use the tone knob and stuff. But
well, that's cool. So throughout high school, then you played with these bands, and then at what point did you get into sort of being a blues man?
Well, like I said, I heard Crossroads, and that kind of lit me up and going, hey, this is all blues, but everybody wasn't into blues back then, or they thought they weren't. So I would kind of like on the sly keep, you know, listening to blues stuff. So we used to sneak off and go to Psychedelic Shack on Stony Island, sneak in the back door and listen to some of the bands and stuff back then and stuff. Or Lee's Unlettered, we used to sneak in there all the time too and stuff till they, okay, kid, get out of here, you know. But, you know, through high school and stuff, and then I took some professional lessons, some advanced lessons and stuff, trying to get music theory and stuff kind of in my head. You never get it all in your head. And that kind of lit a light for me as far as my playing and stuff is concerned, and I just kind of went off from there. Then I moved out here in 86, and my neighbor stopped by. I had quit playing for a while. I had a guitar in the corner, and he goes, whose is that? And I go, it's mine. I used to play it and stuff. And he goes, I don't even know if it works. He goes, oh, bring it over to my house. We'll plug it in my Marshall, see how it works, you know. So that led to jamming, and that led to an Allman Brothers tribute band. So we did that for 5 years and stuff, and then I started getting to the point where I was starting to hate songs that I loved.
Right.
You know, and then nobody would let you step out. We were playing all these big gigs and stuff, but for a lot of money, but they wanted to hear it like the Allman Brothers.
Just like the record,
You remember on Route 30 in Frankfurt, I can't think of the name of the place.
Gus was the owner. Yeah. Reflections.
We played there one night, and and the Allman Brothers were playing at the World Theater. Uh-huh. So he had a thing where if you brought your ticket stub after the concert and came down there, you got a free drink and half off to get in or something.
Right.
So this place is packed, you know. I was walking around before the show started, and somebody's going, yeah, they're going to open with this song, then they're going to go to this song, then they're going to play this song. And I was like, oh, man, is it that? Is that noticeable?
Predictable, so
I went up and told everybody, we're not playing that one. Throw that set list away.
All right.
You know, and we just did it. But we actually met Warren Haynes and Tom Dowd that night.
Oh, nice.
They were at the World Theater, and they stopped down there and stuff, and they were like, we had to figure this out. And Tom Dowd said, he says, that's the closest anybody's come to getting that Allman Brothers sound.
So, and he was the producer of a lot of those great records. Yeah.
Right. So.
Well, that's pretty cool. Did you know that they were in the audience at the time?
No.
That's probably better that way.
Yeah, because I think I would have froze.
Wow. And so from Eat the Peach, that was the band Eat the Peach?
Yeah, Eat a Peach.
Eat a Peach,
And then I was getting burnt out on it, you know, doing the same stuff all the time. They wouldn't let you step out on a lot of tunes and stuff. We played up at Toto's, the old Toto's.
Yeah.
And we threw in two original songs, and they went, whoa, you can't do that. Mm. These people paid big money for an Allman Brothers tribute. You stick to the format. I'm like, all right. So I just started... I was kind of lost, and then I was playing blues, and then this friend of mine called me up one day, and he goes, I remember the old Sharon's Cove, he goes, you get up here, there's a guy that plays music just like you want to play it, just like you're trying to play. So I went up there, and it was Mike Gibbon, the Homewreckers, and I was like, man, this is where my heart's at, you know? And I first met Johnny there, and Mike Gibb, I forget who was on bass and drums. I don't know who was on bass. Dennis was on drums at that time. And I was like, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to do. So we would follow Mike around, and he would invite us up at times, and we'd have a good time and stuff. So then after that, Johnny had left to go with Studebaker, and I kind of filled in for Johnny.
We're talking about Johnny Cosgrove.
Cosgrove, yeah. And the rest is history, you know. I said to Mike one day, I go, when do we rehearse? He goes, showtime. Get it by the first go around or go home.
I throw the baby in the water, right? Teach him to swim, yeah.
Yep. But through that and through Mike Gibb and the Homewreckers and through my connection with Killer Ray and going down to the Flamingo, that's when I started to meet all these people and stuff. And so when it came time for the jam, I started calling out to these people. I used to have to beg people to come down and be a guest host and stuff.
Now your phone rings off the hook.
Yes. I couldn't, like last year was the first year I couldn't get everybody in that I had scheduled. And only a couple people repeated last year, and that was only because of cancellations and I needed somebody fast right. and stuff. But, you know, it's like you can't fit that many people in a season.
You'll have so many weeks. And, right. But that's a great testament to, you know, your success.
Right. We had one guest host that was recording down in Nashville. And I'm not going to name names, but he was recording down in Nashville, and they were taking a break from the recording, and the people, the engineers and stuff, said, we're going to watch this jam on the internet and stuff, if you want to come watch it and stuff with us. And he was watching it with him. He goes, hey, I know all those guys. They're up from by my house. You know, he's from Chicago. He got back to Chicago, and he called me up, and he's going, hey, I saw your jam on the internet. Can I do your jam? You know, and I was like, sure.
You know. You're worldwide, right? Like I said. But that's so cool, you know, that normally something like that would just be localized. Only the people in the neighborhood would know about it.
Right, right.
But now you got people in Italy and Nashville. And I know guys would check in from Florida and California. And
Brazil, Italy. We had a firehouse in New Jersey. The firemen were on 24 hours and then off 48. So that's three shifts. So every Sunday, whatever shift was on, they would all tune in and then tell the next shift, you know, for the next week and stuff. And it just kept going on and on.
We got to talk to John and get him back out there.
It's not feasible money-wise anymore.
Sure.
But, yeah, I think that's probably going to be the next thing, either to get the club owners to get this Giggity TV, which does the same thing, or figure out a way to make it profitable for somebody like John or John to do that and stuff, you know.
Well, I know the Giggity TV, like especially out at like Legends, they show some of the shows are free, and the other ones you pay a small,
right?
You know, admittance fee, and it's $5 or something, but you can see a whole show.
Right. I didn't get to see my show because I didn't have a credit card to.
Right.
At the time.
So let's talk about that. You guys played up at Buddy Guy's Legends recently.
Yeah, we last June, I think 23rd or so. Originally, it was supposed to be Dario Lombardo. He was coming in. Then he had problems with the passport and stuff because they changed the passport laws. The agents down at Buddy said, well, these guys were going to back him. You know, they have the day free. Can they front it? So Randy told him, yeah, they can do just fine and stuff. So we got to go down there. We did the opening act for New Blue, which is Buddy Guy's daughter's band and stuff. And Mark Maddox, he's the booking agent and stuff down there and stuff. And they all came up to the green room and said, you know, we did a great job. You guys will be back and stuff. So they've called, and they're talking about maybe March or April about getting back in there, but I haven't got a definite date yet.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, and also I know more recently, the last couple of years, you guys played the Chicago Blues Festival. What was that like?
That was Dolores and Dario were putting that together. It was supposed to be a tribute for Phil Guy. So they were trying to get as many as Phil's past musicians together for that. And then I got asked to do it because I was friends with Phil, and Phil was going to do our show a bunch of times, but he was always sick, so he never got around to it. So they asked me to go up there and stuff, and we just, you know, the lady that runs the Blues Fest said, if you can keep the audience there for an hour and stuff, you guys, you know, we'll be back, and it's a good thing. So that was the first year for that doing the tribute thing. That woman came back, and I go, well, it looks like we had a couple hundred people there. She goes, no, you had a couple thousand people there, you know, and you kept them interesting all through it. So the next year they did a tribute to Muddy, and then now every year they do a tribute to somebody. But it was actually started from our show and stuff. So
nice. Yeah, Phil, you know, I think so many people talk about Buddy Guy. But, you know, Phil was a great musician in his own right. I mean, I remember seeing Phil before I saw Buddy.
Yeah, me too. Not taking nothing away from Buddy, but it was like I was more thrilled at Phil and stuff, you know. I got there. Billy Branch used to have a show at the Genesis Club. I forget what night of the week it was. So I used to go down to that, and he asked me to get up and play one night and stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, there's Ronnie Baker Brooks, Phil Guy, all these big names in the audience. What could I possibly do to entertain these people right. and stuff? And then he's, Randy's going, just get up there and be yourself, you know. And Phil, he always goes, that white guy up there at the Genesis Club, he goes, that's the cat to be, you know. So.
Well, and that's it. That's, you know, when some of these guys and the more established blues guys give you an opportunity and you shine, you know, that's another feather in your cap. You know?
Yeah, there's a lot of times we didn't shine, though. But
but that's part of the process, I think, right, too. Right. I mean, I remember going out to the checkerboard and probably falling flat on my face, but I came back the next week and I was better for
right,
it. You know?
Right, yeah. Right, right. I Johnny was back in LV Banks down at the checkerboard, and I went down there a couple of times with him. And then, like a year or two later, I think it was with Mike Gibber or something. We went back to the checkerboard, and LV was up there on stage, and he goes, you didn't get up last time, get up this time, you know. And I remember getting up, and there used to be photographs on this wall on the side of the stage and stuff. And while I was playing, I'm looking at the photographs. It's muddy with the Stones and Eric Clapton and all this other stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, whoa, that's the stage I'm standing on.
I'm on the
right
big boy
now.
Stage. Yeah.
But that was cool. That was cool. That was the first time I got up there at the checkerboard and stuff. So.
And it's just, you know, in some ways it's kind of like a rite of passage.
Mike used to say it was paying your dues.
Same thing, you know. I mean, you have to go through certain channels to kind of get there.
I guess.
You know. I mean, whether you want to or not, some guys will force you to it. And in other ways, you were doing that with the young guys at your jam, saying you want to come up and play with these real musicians and see how it's done. I mean, some guys will just start playing, and they don't tell you what key it is, and they just start playing, and you got to figure it out, and you're right. on your own. But that makes you a stronger musician.
Right, you know? Right, right. No, a lot of times like that. Even myself, you know, playing with somebody, you're getting called up to play with somebody that you're not familiar with or something, and you're just winging it, man, you better be on your toes and stuff, you know. Mike used to always say, watch that front man, you know. But
it would say, if it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger.
Yeah, <ain't it? laughs>
right? Yeah. Well, I think there were some other groups that you played with. Did you work with the Blues Posse?
Yeah, that was with Glenn Wisbicki mm-hmm. and Deb Seitz and stuff. I did some stuff with Mike Bailey and Johnny. We did stuff with them. We did one recording. I can't remember the name of it.
Is it, there was One Shot Deal or Rough Road? Was it Rough?
Road Time or something.
But you recorded, you were featured on one of those records?
Yeah, Oreo Cookie Blues. Everybody thinks I wrote it. I didn't write nothing in that. That was Lonnie Mack and Stevie Ray Vaughan. They did an acoustic version of it, and I thought, you know, that'd be cool to do an electric version of it.
Chocolate on my fingers, icing on my lips, sugar diabetes man, and blubber on my hips. You know, I keep the nightlife burning in the kitchen, so I can go downstairs and cruise. I got them Oreo cream sandwich, chocolate covered cream filled cookie blues. Hide them in the kitchen, keep them in a jar. For emergency purposes, I keep them in the glove, come pop under my car. You know, I can't live without them. They get me high than I could ever get on booze. I got them Oreo cream sandwiches, chocolate covered cream filled cookie blues. Play the blues, Johnny. Thank you. says I'm crazy. You better give him up and quick. You'll be pushing up daisies, cause boy, you sure are sick. Can't live without them. They give me high and I could ever get on blues. Watch me now. Dumb Oreo cream sandwich. Chocolate covered cream pill cookie. Built by Nabisco and you know they ain't a rookie. Next best thing to Nookie Blues. That's the Chicago Blues.
With your jam session, you've won some awards. Can you talk about that?
In 2010, we got inducted into the Blues Hall of Fame as having the best jam around ever. You know, there's nobody else in the category. We got an award for Northwest Indiana for helping support, you know, live blues and stuff in Indiana. That's about it.
Well, that's something good to you. Yeah. To your credit that
people
are taking notice.
I was kind of embarrassed about the Blues Hall of Fame thing at first. But, you know, I'm like, there's way too many people that deserve to be in here, not me, you know. And so I was trying to, like, trying to get out of it. And they go, you know, it's kind of a good thing that you're there because the people that are inducted are the people that can nominate other people and stuff. So I started nominating people that I thought deserved to be in there and stuff. So the first one I nominated was Carl Weathersby and Killer Ray Allison. They all got theirs. And then in the past, I've nominated Liz Mandeville, mm-hmm. Tom Holland, and a few others and stuff. I don't know if it's my vote or was it, because I know it goes before a committee and stuff. But yeah, I've nominated you. You know, so.
Excellent. I'll wait for that phone call. But, I mean, I think it's great, too, because whether or not you think that you deserve it, that your peers think that you deserve it, especially because what you've done, you said a lot of these jam sessions don't last longer than 6 months. So the fact that yours is going on 16 years, you're doing something right.
Yeah, we're doing something right. You know, everybody's having fun. It's still going. You know, when it stops becoming fun, that's when it's time to leave it lay and stuff. But, you know, it's my way of bringing it back, paying it back to the people that can't go down in the city or won't go down in the city for whatever reason. It's giving them a taste of what it would be like to go down to the Mines or, you know, Blues or Buddies or the Harlem Avenue Lounge, any of them.
Right.
So, you know, it's my way of kind of bringing it out to the burbs and stuff. My ultimate goal is to kind of take this show on the road, you know, take a couple of our guest hosts and the house band and go do a gig somewhere and give them a taste of what it's like to be like a mini blues fest kind of thing.
Kind of a review.
And we did Buddy and Pals last year in Schererville, and it was standing room only. And that place, as they said, seats 400 people. You know, so even their locals there, the regulars were like, they should have done this years ago, you know.
Right.
So.
I know a couple of years ago, was it the Lake County Fair?
Right.
And you did the same sort of thing, where you had a lot of different guest artists, and it was really like a blues review, a blues show.
Right. 2 years ago, we started that. Tom Lounges had us at the Lake County Fair. And I brought Ronnie Hicks, Liz Mandeville, Johnny Drummer. I'm going to leave somebody out. Maurice John Vaughn.
Was Sonny or Barry Spurdy on that one?
Barry Spurdy, yeah. Was on it. I can't remember everybody, but we did it. It was a success. We did 3 hours nonstop music with only a like 5 minute break. We had Ryan Fromm's band. They filled in on give us a little bit of a break, but it was nonstop music, and the fair board went, "This is great."
Yeah.
So we went, and we got asked to come back again last year, and then somebody was thinking that that's not a good idea to do that much music because they want people to get out in the midway and go.
Mm-hmm.
So we broke it up into three sets and stuff, and we brought back Liz Mandeville and a few others and stuff, and it was a real good show and stuff, and we've been asked back for next year too. So.
And that's a show.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, people think they're you know, it really goes back to sort of these old R&B shows where they had every artist show up and do three songs or, you know, do their hits rather than, you know, each artist playing an hour, and that might not appeal to everyone, but there's always something coming right down the pipe at them.
You know? Right. And then the artists sell their CDs and stuff, you know, and they get a bigger audience and stuff. So if I can help make all these people a little bit more famous, I'm going, then my job's done, you know. But
okay, so it's 2017, and you're starting up the jam session. Last week you had Maurice
Chandler,
and who do you have coming up?
Randy Johnson from the Expressions Band.
Okay,
and then we have you the following week and stuff, and Cheryl Youngblood's coming pretty soon. I have to schedule a date with her.
I don't know her. Who is she?
I can't think of the name of her. She's going to be mad at me. I can't think of the name of her band, but she's got a hot band that's been touring around and stuff, and she just got inducted into the Blues Hall of Fame and stuff. I'm going to bring back Dr. Root again, Tom Holland, just all the usual suspects, you know, that put on a good show and draw people out and stuff. And, you know, I don't book too far in advance on our jam show because I want the art. I can't pay a lot. So I want the artists, if they still can pop up with a gig that's going to pay them more, I want them to be able to take that gig and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I kind of hold off, you know, if they ain't got a gig in 2 or 3 weeks, it's pretty good chance you got it covered. So,
and if people want to find out about the jam, I know you're very active on Facebook.
Facebook right now, we've been, you can Facebook Bob Mandarino, the only one that's holding the guitar in the picture.
And again, it's the County Line Poorhouse in DeMott, Indiana.
Correct.
I don't know if you want to talk about this or not, but DeMott is close to Roselawn.
Yeah.
And I know, I think Johnny had told me that you get some of the nudists that come out to your show. Of course, they put clothes on to come to the club. But you guys have done a performance at the nudist camp?
Yeah. They asked us to come down there and do one of their shows out by the pool and stuff. And I was nervous at first, but it turned out to be a lot of fun and stuff. And we got asked back. I think we're coming back there 4th of July and then another party and stuff there. And they all support our show real good and stuff. So why not do it?
That's fun. And, of course, the band is clothing optional.
Yes, clothing optional. And I'm going to fire anybody that wants to get their clothes off. Put it this way. I did one show years ago with Mike Gibb there. And it was pretty weird. It was different. It's a whole different story now. But back then it was kind of weird. And then the drummer disappeared for 4 days, the bass player disappeared for 4 days before he showed up again. So
you don't want to know, right?
No.
What happens in the nudist colony stays.
Stays in the nudist colony.
You did some recording at the spot, and it was. It's kind of a demonstration of how the Spot Studio operates. So you were able to cut a couple songs there?
Yeah, that was, John was having his open house at the Spot Studio in Snyder, Indiana. You've recorded it.
Mm-hmm, John Huber.
It's like, you know, no matter how much I try to tell people what this studio is like, you can't put it together in words without going there and seeing it firsthand. So John decided to have an open house and invite people to come in, see the studio, see all the different aspects of the studio and stuff. And he thought it was a good idea. We'll have a band in there recording while you're coming through looking at it. So we went in there and did a couple tunes.
The one song you sang on, what's that song?
Party Till the Cows Come Home, Elvin Bishop song. A little bit of a different aspect. You know, it's still blues, but it's kind of country blues,
mm-hmm.
rocking kind of thing. Just people to wake up and get off their feet.
Yeah, it's kind of a boogie, a dance boogie.
Right.
Go. Tonight we're gonna let these good times
it's one thing to get to work with a bunch of great musicians once in a while, but through a lifetime, it's a whole different experience. So,
and it just continues to evolve.
Right, yeah. Right. And I'd really like to thank all the players that have evolved over the years for our show and stuff. You know, without them, it would have been impossible to do.
What do you say we make some music, Bob?
Sounds cool.
Nothing but the blues. You give me nothing but the blues.